Hi, my name is Jamie Forrest. I'm the Academic Program Director here at Perimeter. Our first speaker of the day is Dr. Joseph Strauss. Dr. Strauss co-founded JDS Vitel in 1981, which eventually merged with Uniphase to make JDS Uniphase. And many of you may be too young to recognize JDS Uniphase, but certainly when I was a graduate student, it was an absolute giant in technology. Joseph did his undergrad at the Czech Technical University in Prague, and then did a PhD at the University of Alberta. He's had a number of honorary degrees: University of Alberta, Touro College, University of Ottawa, and Carleton University. And I did look up. I tried to find information, and so I typed in with Google, and I typed in, you know, Joseph Strauss, University of Alberta, honorary degree. First, I was looking for his PhD. I couldn't find the title. And then I got this link, and it said it looked perfect. I looked at it, and it was all about the time he had his honorary degree. I couldn't find it. I thought there'd be a big article, maybe a photo. And there was a photo. The photo's this. Joseph got his honorary degree the same day as Wayne Gretzky. So you cannot compete in Edmonton, Alberta with Wayne Gretzky. Anyways, he's done some fantastic things and is a shining example of what you can do with a physics PhD outside of physics. So I'd like to introduce Dr. Joseph Strauss.
So I came here, I was invited to come, and I came here because I very much sympathize with everybody who is here, because when I finished my PhD degree, I'm going to talk about it, everybody said, where are you going to go? Well, I didn't know where I was going to go. I got somewhere where I went. I'm going to tell you what happened there. So I thought that then later on, as you suggested, I got an honorary degree, same university. And then the physics department, they wanted to understand how do you transition from physics to business. So I made a little presentation. This is a little bit of an extract from it. And the reason I want to kind of talk about it, because all of you, everybody here, practically has the same capabilities. You know, sometimes you have to have a little luck, but you have to have the desire to be able to learn anything the life puts in front of you. And I made this talk and titled From Schrödinger Cat to Schrödinger Cat. And it will come out, why did I actually made the title of this talk? Well, if you have a physics degree or studying physics, everybody knows Schrödinger Cat. You know Schrödinger with umlaut Ö. You know, in here they say Schrödinger Cat. You'll get there. Schrödinger Cat. So I said, called it From Schrödinger Cat to Schrödinger Cat. That's my speech. So I want to show you something. That's like, how did I go from there to science to business? So here is this guy who just started to work in Bell Northern Research, must be around 74. Young guy, still had my hair. I still had the lab coat. And here, when I became official now, you had to pose, you had to do answers, questions, left and right. So this was like, I don't know, 2001, many years ago. So then here's a little bit of a background I want to tell you, because I want to sympathize with all the activities and how I got from where I got. So I studied in Prague. It was physics at that time. I ended up in Edmonton. I got my PhD. I've got to tell you that. And then I received a postdoc. This was one of those things. I don't know whether it still exists. Industrial postdoc. I received that Bell Northern Research. You know, some of these organizations don't exist anymore. Is there a little? No, there's no thingy there. So then from Bell Northern, this was a research organization, similarly like Bell Labs used to be in the United States. Went to Nortel. Nortel doesn't exist anymore. And it was like a great company. I really enjoyed working there because it was all about telecommunications. I'm going to describe to you a little bit. And then we were lucky, my colleagues, we've made this company called JDS Optics. Then we joined with some Japanese company. Around 1990, we renamed the company JDS Vitel. We were reasonably organized. We went in with an IPO in 99. We joined this US company, Uniphase, and it was a peak. It was a peak and a bust in telecommunications. If you go study the 1999, 98 to 2003, the growth of internet, that's all happened there then. By 2003, I was a goner, done. you know, like I tell you later about it, okay? So what happened? I want to talk about science. So I did my PhD in electron tunneling. I don't know how much you know about electron tunneling, but I think in quantum mechanics, beginning of quantum mechanics, everybody learns how the electron can tunnel through a little barrier, right? It's what the wave function does, what happens on the other side, and it's actually a real thing. So when I went to do with my professor, I actually got my PhD, but I was so in physics. You know, I thought I was smart, but a couple of guys in the area received Nobel Prize. A guy called Gaber, in semiconductors, Gaber in 73, I was still students, I met him. He was the first one, Gaber, who did electron tunneling and detected gaps in superconductors. If you go back to his papers, I am sure you're studying in physics, electron tunneling, he was the one who determined and showed that there is practical gap in superconductors and he could measure each metal, the superconducting gap. The other guy was Josephson, he was 22 years old, when he told one of his professors, you can't neglect this little thing. You know, when you do approximation, the guy says, this is second order, we don't need to do that, you know, ignore it. He says, I'm not ignoring it. I'm going to study what it does. And he actually came up with a calculation which shows that Cooper pairs in superconductors would travel through the gap. And he proved the whole thing, how they behave today. Josephson junction they use for standards for measuring some magnetic fields using all kinds of heavy magnetometers. That was Josephson. The other guys there in 86, Binninger and Rohrer, received Nobel Prize for electron tunneling in vacuum. If you can do tunnel through an oxide, people said, why couldn't we tunnel through just through a gap? Well, I tried to do it overnight. Of course, I failed. What did I know? But this guy worked, prepared the machine for a year and a half, you know, in IBM, in Switzerland, Swiss Precision, perfect watches, got Nobel Prize. Electron tunneling in a vacuum, right? I could tell you I was just no good. But there was this guy who was my external, who agreed for me to get the PhD, Dan Tsui. He got a Nobel Prize also. And when he came, I told my professor, you know, this guy was still working at Bell Labs. I said, he's so smart, he's going to get a Nobel Prize. Sure enough. So Dan Tsui was my external. I said, okay, give him. So I got it, okay, what can I say? So I got it. Somebody said, go work in BNR. One of my markers, you know, like in physics department, you have people who mark your assignments, right? He worked there, and he remembered, because I always fought with him, I told you, you know nothing about delta functions. So delta functions don't work that way. I knew quite a lot about delta functions, that's why. So he said, let's hire the guy in BNR. But he didn't hire me for delta functions. I went working fiber optics. And, you know, that was the beginning of fiber optics. I'm going to describe a little bit. So, you know, I started first in the research, and then when things got a little bit better, then it started to make, maybe we'll make 10 of those or 20 of those. Maybe we do a field trial. So then they said, oh, it's not research, it's development. Oh, you're going from research to development. You're selling your soul. I said, well, the customer wants it. I know it, guys. It's actually not that bad. Then when we made 10 of those, oh, some customer wants more. Can we make 1,000 of this? Now you call manufacturing. Now you have to buy, sell. But somebody had to pay for it. You know, I said, okay, I'll do it for you guys. So, you know, you have to have open mind. So that's how I got into it. So then I said, wait a second, I can do it in my basement. So we made this company called JDS, Just Do Something. That's how it went, okay? We really just started, three other guys. One guy bought it, another guy bought it, and it was a successful company. But I want to talk to you about the physics. Everybody knows about the Schrödinger cat, right? I mean, you know, anybody doesn't know about the Schrödinger cat, everybody knows. Is the cat alive or dead, right? This is a big conundrum in interpretation of wave functions, what's happening, and all those things. So I had a lady CFO friend in my company, And she was very much in accounting. So she was teaching me accounting to such a degree that she told me, you know too much, you can go to prison if you do. Because I said, how can you do write-offs? How can you do POs? Then I was teaching her this. And this lady here, I'm going to show her. She is now an Order of Canada recipient. And she did this very famous Fogo Island Inn. If you go on a web, Fogo Island Inn, she's done in that. That's my friend Zita Cobb. And you know, whole very, but after 1 month, I'm telling her about the Schrödinger cat. She's telling me accounting. After 1 month, she tells me, why do you want to cut the shred the cat? So I said, I gave up, okay. But here I'm telling her all about Schrödinger cat, wave function, delta function. Why do you want to cut the shred? I gave up, I said, I forget it. No more physics for you. But that's how science and business, you know, that worked out well. So Bada and I want to tell you another one about science to business. It's kind of this guy Pasteur, you know, the guy Pasteur did about these injections. He said when he figured out how to do injections for people and save the guy from rabies, oh, you must be smart. Chance favors the prepared mind. If you're ready for anything, you study, you learn, you get an open mind, you understand the opportunity sooner than somebody else. It's you catch the wave, that's all. You just catch the wave. So I want to tell you what happened to us in business, then I'm going to come back to the science, business a little bit. So I told you, chance favors the prepared mind, because at that time when I was working in Bell Norton and Nortel, three things happened in the industry. First of all, the regulation came that, you know, Bell Canada was a had a monopoly, and AT&T had a monopoly. The guy said, no, you can have somebody else, other carriers. There was a big decision. Bell Canada, you know, they had a guaranteed return, guaranteed this, from 8% from Canada every day at the rate hearing. No more. You can have competition, right? At the same time, internet came about. Just about internet, you know, around 97, 98. I remember I had a fellow who, oh, we send our software or update through internet. What? I said, what? We don't send papers anymore, all through internet. I said, wait, I better. So I hired him vice president paper eliminator. But didn't work. He still had paper, but I learned something about internet. And then technology came, and I want to talk about technology. So what really happened, I tell you, our technology was nothing else, just learning how to put fibers in front of lenses such that it survived environmental conditions, survived all the things which when people put in the field, they don't fail. And then from here, we made different devices. Either we combined the light, we switched with little units, all in mechanics actually. We could attenuate light, splitters. We could even make circulators. Those who know electronic engineering, you know about circulators. And we made a unit called wavelength division multiplexer, which was the key. Which more or less you can combine light of different colors into the same path. So what really happened in fiber transmission, if people wanted to bring fiber and telecommunication fiber optics from point one to point two, like in the big cities, you had to dig fibers. And digging fibers through ground is very expensive. You have to buy, like you have to buy digger, you have to buy right of ways, you have to have permission, you know, it's complicated, very expensive. So when fiber optics got accepted, the leader of those was a company called MCI. Very quickly, the pipes got filled with information, you know, internet information. So people said, we need another fiber. So in order to put another fiber, you would have to dig another trench or another trench. So we came up with this, you know, there are other people, but we actually made a device which we call wavelength digital multiplexer. You could put different wavelengths, I just symbolize it with different colors, you know, different wavelengths were all in infrared at that time, put them together and then combine them and decombine them the other end. So here we said four times. So we could say you could reuse the fiber four times. Today, people use even 100 wavelength, you know? So the same fiber, the capacity is increased tremendously without additional cost of digging fibers. And then the other thing came out as a technological innovation which we capitalize on. You know, in telecommunications, we transfer from point one to point two, And if you want to go from here to California, the signal kind of decreases after so many miles. So you have to build in these huge repeater stations. And repeater stations are expensive. You may have to do electronics. You have to build a hut. You have to provide power every 100 miles, 60 miles. So we came up, and the industry came up, and we commercialized a fiber optic fiber amplifier, which was that big, was all amplified in optical domain. No need to build these huge contraptions. You could build fiber amplifiers with erbium doped fiber, which amplified the light 100 times maybe. So this unit would probably, at that time, was $20,000, $30,000, save $2, $3 million. So there was a heavy demand for that at that time. So then it grew. Now I want to go back to business a little bit. I used to go to physics department, and they used to say, well, how did you go to business? Well, it's simple. I said, I write this equation down for you. This equation, I said, is a combination, if you do a little bit of study, of Brownian motions. Everybody knows about Brownian motions, right? Everybody here, I guarantee you. Stochastic processes, maybe the graduate student learning stochastic statistics, on and everybody learned diffusion equation. That's the first year of physics, for sure. So, you know, I put this equation together, and I asked the physics department, you guys can figure it out also. What does this represent? So in physics department, everybody took out the, you know, TI calculators and calculated, right? Some have particle comes here, diffuses go there. I had the ball because I said, you see, great equation. But if you could understand all these processes, all physics, nothing about economics, all physics, you could get Nobel Prize in economics. It's called the Black-Scholes equation for option pricing. Pricing and options in stock market was developed by these two guys based on nothing else, on basic physics. Today, this is considered, if you go everywhere and anywhere in the market, they say, what's the option? What's the price of stock going to be? What's the statistical thing? Of course, it's all on certain assumptions. You have to know the assumption. But if this is an accepted standard, and I used to tell the physics department, you, if you understood a little bit the other side of the world, the economic side and the other side, you could make this equation because this has done all this. So I started to understand that, in fact, there's a very heavy connection between one side, the other side. So I then used to say in this department, hey, physics students, maybe you should study a little bit of economics, how the world drives it. You know, I know you have to do this course, that course, that course, that course. But you could tell your professor, I want to study a basic economics course, basic business finance. I want to talk about my son. My son actually, just like addendum, he finished his PhD also in Brown on some nanoparticles. And when he came back, I said, Daddy, what should I do? I said, you know what, Daniel, he came back to Toronto. They just opened a Shuley School of Business, a Master of Business Finance. Go study. So he was okay because, you know, in physics he understood. Today he's working in a bank in ETF. He's an ETF specialist, probably the best guy in Canada in ETFs, which are instruments in stock market. So all I want to say in physics, you need to understand a little bit what the world drives around. Important. And there's nothing wrong moving from one field to another field to another field because your basis of education gives you that. And just have to be like Pasteur, chance favors the prepared mind. And then I told the art people, you gotta study physics too, because if you can balance one and the other, you end up like a little prince. You know, you can dream, don't forget to dream, but the life goes on with some of the things. So then you can look at the outside, enjoy yourself. Thank you.